Good morning, one and all, and welcome to another episode here at the Damage Report. Today is Thursday. It's a big news follow-up Thursdays. And not only do we have a full show, an awesome 90 minutes of news, buckle up, hold on to your butts. We also have a special treat, but we don't have it yet. So we are going to be joined wonderfully, blessedly by Gary Chambers. Gary Chambers had been on the show multiple times last year, helped get us through one of the most difficult parts of the past few years of politics, pandemic and the election and all of that. And then he ran for office, couldn't do the show for a while. Now he is going to be back, but we're having some technical issues. So what we're gonna do is something that we have not done in like 2 years. I'm actually gonna be doing a solo segment. We're gonna be talking about the voting rights bill, the voting rights bill that was and then wasn't. And then during our first break, which might or might not still be a social break, we're gonna be connecting with Gary and then he's gonna join us for the rest of the show. And in that rest of the show, there's actually quite a lot to look forward to. We're gonna give you updates on two of your favorite politicians, Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. What's up with them? Is it good stuff or is it bad stuff? Don't go anywhere. We're gonna break it down for you. And let's see, Donald Trump's new social network. So he wants to get you to move past Facebook and Twitter and all that. He's got a new one. And it sort of had an initial rollout. And we're gonna evaluate how that went together. And we got a whole bunch of stuff. Can you actually get jobs? They say we're all lazy and nobody's trying to get a job. What if you actually do? What happens to you? Meghan McCain is complaining about literally everything, and cops are the worst in a bunch of different ways. So we've got a lot to look forward to. You have me coughing to look forward to. Before we get to all that though, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great. And if you wanna send us comments, tweets, super chats, you know the deal. We'll have that for you. My cough is almost surely making my producers even more frustrated than they already were with the tech problems we're dealing with. I can see Sophie's face. So with that, you know what we're gonna do? We're gonna give it the old college try and try to do this first block. Okay, so let's take a moment away from the infrastructure bill for just a little bit. That train wreck is coming, don't worry. But remember voting rights, remember those? When we used to have those? So there have been a couple of different bills that the Democrats have discussed through the course of this year. I apologize for one sec, I'm sorry. This is like really devastating me right now. Okay. I got a COVID test 2 days ago, I don't have COVID. So there have been a couple of different bills that the Democrats have tried to roll out around voting rights. You of course have the For the People Act, Joe Biden's bill, pretty all encompassing, not only in ensuring voting rights and ending partisan gerrymandering, but also new disclosure of campaign finance. And that was a non-starter. And I don't just mean because of the filibuster, like that eventually would have stopped it. I mean, they didn't even get started because people like Joe Manchin were against that bill. Doesn't seem to really care about whether you get to vote or not, and certainly doesn't want more disclosure of big donations and things like that. So he was against that. So then he had a second bill that was more pared down and no Republicans would support it. But don't worry, we have a backup. And that is this third voting bill that Joe Manchin approved. He's down for it. And he has spent literally weeks trying to get Republicans to sign on to it, because it isn't just that we need to get Manchin. It isn't just that we need to get to 50 votes. This is the Senate where there's an automatic filibuster for literally everything. So you have to get 10 Republicans to sign on. I mean, you don't have to. Alternatively, you could get rid of the filibuster or reform it on this topic, but that again is a non-starter for Joe Manchin. And so there's been all this drama. We've gone through literally months of bill after bill after bill and courting Republicans and all that. And yesterday they had a vote, and what happened? Well, the Senate Republicans blocked it. It didn't pass. I mean, it's not even going on to a full, like they're just automatically blocking it in the Senate. Because, and it's the weirdest thing, Joe Manchin, who was so sure that he could get Republicans to cross the aisle and spent weeks doing it. By the way, not just spending his weeks, let's be clear, he's spending our weeks. We don't have long for the window to close where literally nothing can be done. We have this brief period and he wasted more of it yet again, and no Republicans actually supported it. So you had all 50 Democrats and independents supported bringing, this is the Freedom to Vote Act to the floor. But 50 Republicans voted against doing so. And that means that they were 10 short of the 60 you need in a functional democracy. You should have to have 60 senators, which represent far, far, far less than 50% of the population, can block voting reform necessary to reform the system to make it more actually reflective of what the people want. Isn't that amazing? That you have a system that is biased against the majority, and because it's biased against the majority, it can stop reforms necessary to get rid of the bias. It's baked in. And you have it being defended. But I wanna be very clear about who the ultimate bad guys are here, because obviously the 50 Republicans are bad. They don't actually have a problem. It's not that the bill is gonna reduce the security or any of the nonsense that they're going to say to cover for it. They want states to be free to suppress the vote, and that's what we've been getting. We'll get back to the numbers in a little bit. We've gone over them multiple times. So they're bad. We all know that. That's the easiest thing in the world. But it is the Democrats at the end of the day that in theory are in charge. Now they're not in charge really in the Senate under the status quo because of the filibuster, but they do have everything they need to reform the filibuster or to get rid of the filibuster. Along a wide swath of possible reforms, you could do one of the simplest things that I want, which is hashtag force the buster. That is actually making them filibuster if they're gonna filibuster. Because here is the amazing thing. Republicans voted against this weakened down version of a weakened down version of a voting rights bill. And we're talking about it, and some other good people in independent media will do it. You know, New York Times had an article about it, that's good. And that was yesterday, and now we're moving on. And that's it. What, is there gonna be a news cycle for the next 5 days about it? No, of course there's not gonna be a news cycle for 5 days about it. And so what do you have? You have the Republicans doing something that is, at least in theory, very unpopular. You have them willing to potentially grind the Senate to a halt to make sure that you can't vote. But I said hypothetically unpopular because they don't have to do that. They don't have to grind anything to a halt. They just wouldn't support it. They filibustered it with no filibuster. There's not gonna be any Mr. Smith goes to Washington. There's not gonna be any Cat in the Hat readings. Ted Cruz isn't gonna have to like talk about what movies he's watched recently. There's not going to be a display in DC that the media, or at the very least C-SPAN, can stay focused on, and we get to see as a country how long are the Republicans willing to stop this? How long are they willing to show the American people that they don't give a damn if we have a functioning democracy or not? But we don't have that. And it's not that we don't have that because of the Republicans. We don't have that because of the Democrats. We can't get them to eliminate the filibuster. We can't get them to reform the filibuster, lower the threshold maybe, which, let's be very clear, if you lowered it to 56 or to 55 votes or to 52 votes, it wouldn't matter in this case anyway. They're not gonna do a carve out so that we can have a democracy, that certain bills like this can be passed. Although I will point out, as I always do, that carve outs already exist for everything the Republicans will ever want to do. They can get their tax cuts, they can get their justices, but you don't get a carve out for democracy. And you can't even force them to actually do the filibuster. The simplest reform imaginable, that is beyond us because of people like Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, but not even just them. There's others besides. So we can't get that. We can't get that. So what do you not get? Again, bearing in mind that this is a watered down version of a watered down version, the bill would have set federal standards for early and mail-in voting and make Election Day a national holiday, among other provisions. The most obvious common sense things you can imagine. It would also mandate that voters provide some form of identification before casting a ballot, a requirement that many Democrats had previously resisted. That's in for two reasons. One, because people like Joe Manchin have bought into right-wing propaganda about voter IDs and things like that. But more importantly, to get some Republicans to cross over. So this is bipartisan watch, you know, day 500. Did it work? We get their racist ass provision and we add it to the voting rights bill. Did they line up for it to support it? That's what they want. They want voting ID. No, no, 50 didn't, 10 didn't, one didn't. You get nothing. You give them what they want, you get nothing. Because while they want that, more importantly, they don't want you to be able to vote. And they certainly don't want the Democrats to pass anything. Now, sharing my anger on this topic, we have Ilhan Omar, who says the filibuster and the Democratic senators who continue to uphold it are killing our democracy. That is obviously true. And you have some good progressives who would do something about it, but far too many would not. Now, I have an idea of one other individual who might also be frustrated by this whole thing. And he joins us now, Gary Chambers. Welcome to the Damage Report. How's it going, man? It's been a while.
Hey, brother, how are you? It has been a while.
No, we're super excited to have you back. We had a lot of what passes for fun in American politics at the end of last year. And then you went off to serve in a different way. But now you're back and we're very glad about that. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, man. You know, I was listening to you talk and everything you said is spot on. We are in a deeply troubling time right now in this country. And we've got two people that consistently become a hurdle for the rest of us, and it's unfair to the American people.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, West Virginia is a great place. Arizona's a great place. They deserve representation. Why do they get to determine if we can vote? Like, why should Georgians not be able to vote because the senator from West Virginia and Arizona are like, no, I don't really care about it. And it's more than just those two in this topic. You know, there's enough Democrats, like you have to get rid of the filibuster. To have any chance of this succeeding, you have to get rid of the filibuster. And there's multiple who will not sign on to that. And it's just incredibly frustrating because the stakes couldn't be higher. And we did all this work to get to a position where it's possible. Like they elected two Democrats in Georgia. Nobody believed it could be done. And we still don't get any progress. We don't get any reform.
Well, that means we got to grow our margins. Like we can't be accepting a 50-50 equal on both sides with the vice president. We need to grow our margins. We need to mount up and make sure that we do everything we can to make sure that people who are running for the US Senate in some of these contested races, that they win. Because yeah. What we see is that we know we need more done there. Because we got people that are obstructionists, people who don't care about what happens in places like Louisiana and Georgia. And let's be honest, they don't have to be as concerned about black and brown people in some instances because they don't represent us. And so when you live where I live in a state that is 35% black, you know, we see these things as a real impact on our quality of life and ability to be able to move things forward. And what we don't know is what attempts will be done in the years ahead to continue to try and strip away our rights down here in the South.
Yeah. Yeah, you're 100% right. We definitely do need to do that. We need to win some of these seats currently held by Republicans. And maybe even more importantly, we need to boot the corporate Dems out of the party. Sinema cannot win her primary. Joe Manchin is a harder target to beat considering the state, but we have got to win those spots. But while you're 100% right about that's what we need to do, and by the way, and we need to continue pressuring before then because we can't wait 2 years, we can't wait 4 years, we certainly can't wait 6 years for this. The difficulty is that this directly impacts our ability to do that. So we need to elect more Democrats. How do you do that? You win in states that currently Democrats are not winning in. And what is happening in those states, especially the purple states, the states that are trending blue? What are they doing? They're passing all these bills that make it harder to vote, harder to register. Election day is not going to be a holiday. You can't do mail-in balloting. You can't help people vote. You can't give them water in line. And so we, in theory, need to get to future elections and win those spots. A bill like this, or especially the For the People Act, would get rid of those laws, would make it easier to vote so that you could win those races. But we're not going to do that. They're not going to get rid of the filibuster. And so all these states, and by the way, let's go through it. Between the beginning of this year and September 27th, at least 19 states had enacted 33 laws that make it harder for Americans to vote. Now, there were other states that were making it easier to vote, easier access. Let's see, 25 states enacted 62 laws with provisions that expand voting access. But the issue is, and this was an investigation done by the Brennan Center for Justice, the states that enacted restrictive laws are ones where it's already difficult to vote. The ones that enacted expansive laws are the ones where it's already relatively easy to vote. And so we effectively have something like voting rights apartheid, where if you live in a good state, you can vote. if you live in a difficult state, a really red state, it's harder and harder. So how do you win in those spots where they're making it so impossible to actually vote, Gary?
Well, I think part of that is, you know, we have to look at this in the long game. And that's a difficult thing to say when we recognize all the things that we're up against. And for me, organizing is about being very strategic in our moves forward. We got to continue to apply pressure and not let up on them. We've got to apply pressure to the president because he can use his bully pulpit more than he does. He can also leverage the resources that go into those states and say, you know what, if you're not going to look out for the people in other states, then those people, especially in a state like West Virginia, where we know that the federal government is sending more to West Virginia than West Virginia is sending to the federal government, that if you are not look out for the people in other communities and other places, then why should we be sending money from California to take care of the people of West Virginia? And that is a reality, right? And the president needs to have those conversations in a very real way with Joe Manchin. Instead of letting one person dictate the destiny of an entire people. And that is what is so troubling to me about this entire situation. It is giving him this false sense of power, right? He may have a power in this moment, but outside of that, who gives a damn who Joe Manchin is, right?
Yeah.
And so this makes him feel important. This makes him feel relevant. And we are empowering him more by not ensuring that he does not have the ability to go back into West Virginia and look like a champion.
Yeah. No, you are 100% right. Yeah, and one of the reasons we focus a lot on this on the show, and unfortunately this is a period where we're outside of an election, less people are paying attention, and that bothers me so much is like what happens isn't always just due to the days, the weeks before it. Like the 2024 election, fast forward a couple of years, we're gonna be working for months trying to get people to vote, get them invested and all that stuff, and that is crucial. But in some ways, right now is as important in determining who's gonna vote because they're manipulating state laws to make it harder and harder for Democrats to win the states that were responsible for Joe Biden winning before. In the same way that on the show yesterday, I was talking about like they're taking over these school boards, these insane anti-maskers and anti-vaxxers. We're gonna be doing stories in 3 years about the insane things that these school boards are doing. And that'll be important then, but it's because of now. And so we cannot take a year or 2 years off between these elections. We have to be invested and we have to put pressure on the politicians we have right now. And that's why Gary's so right. Joe Biden is supposed to be worried about his legacy, but he seems incredibly apathetic about it. He's watching Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, and that's what we're gonna talk about next. Like chop out huge sections of it, and he's acting like it doesn't matter, which is either a really risky strategy or an honest reflection of his attachment to these things, his true attachment to getting things done.
You know, I try to be diplomatic when I speak about the president. But Joe is who we always knew he was. Yeah. And as he has served in this office, he has revealed that. And if I had the opportunity to talk with the president, what I would tell him is everything that you gain, you're gonna lose in a short order. If you look back, the Obama presidency was crippled from the midterm elections after they passed the Affordable Care Act on because he lost the House on the other side of that, right? And what's gonna happen in this situation with President Biden? How does he maintain this slim majority that he has if he is not more aggressive to ensure that voting rights are passed? And listen, you can't keep asking black and brown people to get up and mobilize and organize to show up in droves if you ain't giving us nothing. Because we already, many of us did not want you, right?
Yeah.
There are many of us who were not in favor of this president. However, we knew we could not go in the direction that we were in. And now you are there and not giving us the very things that we demanded from day one, right? These are not new things. These are things that we have said from day one. We're just watching the Supreme Court right now work against qualified immunity. Right? These are things that are working against black folks in America. And we have a president who's sitting there with a black vice president, and they are letting a signature piece of legislation to the core voting bloc of this party go up in smoke. And how do you then come back? You can't come back to folks like me and say, hey, charge them up and get them to go out and vote. What do I have to go and get them to go out and vote for?
Yeah, it's an indisputable point, and hopefully someone will bring it to the people in power. Okay, we're gonna take our first break. By the way, we will have our social break. We're gonna have an actual break just for a little bit, because we gotta do a couple tech things, but I'll read some of your comments in just a few. Okay, let's dive into this whole infrastructure thing. We got a video for you.
Dear Senator Sinema, as members of your Veterans Advisory Council, we feel as though we are being used as window dressing for your own image and not to provide counsel on what's best for Arizonans. You've repeatedly ignored our feedback, urging you to act on three issues that support our veterans and protect the heart of our nation. We must protect voting rights by passing the Freedom to Vote Act. We are appalled by your failure to address this issue. You campaigned on lowering prescription drug prices, but now you're opposing the Build Back Better Act. Are you choosing to answer to big donors rather than Arizonans? You were a no-show on the vote to establish a commission to investigate the insurrection. These are not the actions of a maverick. As such, we respectfully resign from your Veterans Advisory Council. Sincerely, Sylvia Gonzalez Anders.
David Lucier.
Rick Peters.
Terry Arabin.
Dana Allman.
Call on Senator Sinema to support the Build Back Better Act now.
As a powerful ad there, it's from Common Defense. That was Sylvia Gonzalez Anders there, but you can see that there's five members of her 20 member strong like advisory panel that was put together of different veterans to advise her. A quarter of them have left. They're done with her nonsense, the games, the lies about what she's gonna do, what she's gonna support, the like leaving so that she doesn't have to vote one way or the other to establish the insurrection panel, like basically all of the childish nonsense and corruption, they're done with it. And so they put out this letter. I wanna read just a couple more quotes from it. They say, "You have become one of the principal obstacles to progress, answering to big donors rather than your own people. We shouldn't have to buy representation from you, and your failure to stand by your people and see their urgent needs is alarming." They said that she hung her constituents out to dry. So Gary, you know, I know that a lot of people, there's a lot of reporting of like former volunteers for her, people who had helped get her elected initially, feeling like they've been betrayed. Some of her friends anonymously saying they feel like they don't know her anymore. Now vets who advise her are actually stepping away as well.
You know, Senator Sinema frustrates me in a very deep way. When we talk about the Build Back Better plan and the ability to go ahead and do infrastructure, I live in South Louisiana. We just had Hurricane Ida a little over a month ago. And we have treetops that are gone off in entire sections of our community. We have swaths of land in South Louisiana with blue rooftops right now because climate change is real. And we're dealing with this. We had a near category 5 hurricane this year and the same last year with Hurricane Laura, right? And on both sides of our state, we're dealing with devastation and recovery. We've got power lines, John, where we drive through these areas and miles of power lines are down, that Build Back Better would help us put those power lines underground to ensure that when storms come in the future, we don't deal with the same level of devastation. So as someone who lives in a state that is deeply impacted by this, that ranks probably in the lower 5 of infrastructure in the country, this is a problem for us. And having a senator that's a holdout and then doesn't even have the courage to show up to vote. And this is my issue with that. If you're gonna be bad, mm-hmm. right? Don't run from it, stand 10 toes down in it, hold your position so that we know where you are and we can come get you the same way that you are leaving us. And so she is doing this very intentionally. I've seen people sit on, walk up to her on airplanes and she ignore people that are talking to her. That's not the type of person that's truly concerned about all of the American people. And the real deal is people like Sinema are more concerned with people who don't share their values, the values that they campaigned on to be elected, then they are the people who are the majority that voted for them. And yeah. If you were wise, you could grow your base by doing that which the people desire. And there are thousands, even millions of people in Arizona that didn't vote. The question is why? How do you activate those people? And you activate those people by giving them what they want. And what she's doing is giving the people who refuse to do better what they want instead of the people who want better for all of us.
Yep. And we're gonna demonstrate it actually, because the veterans are saying that she's just, you know, she's there for her donors, and she wants to make clear without ever saying it that that is the case. That's the effect she's had in a lot of different areas of the Build Back Better bill, which, by the way, is not a progressive's bill. Like, Gary and I didn't write that, and if Bernie had been president, that's not the bill we would have. We're already doing the moderate thing, but we can't get the moderates to sign on to it. Isn't that ridiculous? But so here's the most recent thing from Sinema. Here's a fun little headline. Sinema's opposition stymies Democrats' planned tax rate increases. So you see that and you think, okay, well, yeah, John, you talked about that a few weeks ago. She didn't want to raise the corporate tax as high, you know, as some of the other Dems wanted to. No, I want to be very clear about this. What her position is, according to people in the negotiations, she is against any increase in marginal tax rates on high income individuals, capital gains, corporations, literally no tax increases. Nothing. Not like a slightly higher than Trump had it, but not back to where it was under Obama. Literally nothing. Despite, you can go to her Twitter feed and all of her tweets about the common sense and need to raise taxes on corporations and all that. This is just paying back her donors, who are rich individuals. They're the heads of companies. They invest in these companies and they don't want them to be taxed. And here, I just want to really put a button in this. I read right before the show, you remember the bathroom protest? They followed her in the bathroom. Arizona State Police have recommended charges against those protesters because what they did is illegal. Taking bribes from wealthy individuals and corporations and then totally shutting down an entire presidency to make sure that they don't pay a single dollar more in taxes. Literal money for money, that's all it is. Not illegal, not unethical by the Senate's rules, totally acceptable. But if you follow her into a bathroom to ask about it, you might end up in prison. Is that amazing, Gary?
That's wild. And if you don't want to talk to the people, you shouldn't put your name on a ballot to represent.
Yeah, yeah. Like, Gary, if you were in office right now, imagine like someone coming up to Gary. Gary's sitting in his car and they're like, hey, so I'm just wondering which way you're gonna vote in this. And Gary just like takes a look and just drives away. Like, you can't imagine it. You can't imagine a real person doing this, but she's no longer a real person. And the sum total of the effect of their opposition, like, I'm gonna run through a couple of quick graphics that I talked about in the pre-show yesterday. Tuition-free community colleges out of the package now, supposedly. That's what Biden is telling progressives. No tuition-free community college. By the way, this isn't Bernie Sanders' four-year public college. This is literally just community college, gone, you don't get it. Child tax credit, maybe a year. They might extend it for 1 year. Incredibly popular. It's helped massively to cut childhood poverty in America. Enjoy that for 1 year, okay? So before the next Guardians of the Galaxy is out, it's gonna be gone for good. So enjoy it while you can get it. Home health care, you know, like literally stopping elderly people from needlessly dying in their homes, that's been massively cut. You know, the Clean Power Act, so much already being cut. Paid family leave, they're gonna cut it apparently from 12 weeks to 4 weeks. Like, it's not two senators oppose it, so they shave off a week or two, you know, because there's only a couple of them. No, two senators oppose it, so maybe you get 4 weeks. You know, if they're feeling generous, maybe you get 4 weeks. It's so amazing, this whole process. It's kind of what we expected, but it's so brazen.
I think that, you know, we've got to stop on the front side compromising with these folks, right? We know who they are. We've seen them in action for years at this point. And so we're gonna get this every time we vote for moderates. Every time we let a moderate go in and represent the people, this is what we're gonna end up with. And if you don't have, the reason the government is set up the way that it is so that the presidency has this agenda and then the Congress is a checks and a balances to that, right? And so this is a moderate president. You know, there's no, he's like watching mayonnaise. It's nothing impressive about Joe Biden. Like, you don't get excited watching Joe Biden walk out. There, you know, outside of putting the bomber glasses on, like, that's the thrill of the day with Joe, right? And so knowing this, it's not like we're gonna pretend that this guy is like with me, okay? He's not one of us. He is a moderate. And so for you to go against his plan, it's almost like, you know, you just don't care. You just don't care. And that is the most disrespectful part of all of this for me, right? That you can have somebody that represents us that just displays on a regular basis how little they care about us. And when you're a United States Senator, let's be clear. Though you are elected by the people of Arizona or your home state, there's only 100 of them in the country. And so you represent all of us when you're there. And we want you to consider all of us in these decisions. We know that Republicans are already voting against their interests. We need Democrats that vote in the interests of the people.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. But they don't, and it's super clear. We just had it with Sinema. Let's go to another example of this. A person who has a relationship with Joe Manchin that someone like me doesn't have, someone like Gary Chambers doesn't have. Let's take a look at this video.
Joe is the most important guy in DC.
Yes.
Maybe the most important guy in America today. He is keeping our elected officials somewhere in the middle, and anywhere center right to center left works for me.
Okay, so that is Nelson Peltz, the founder of Trian Partners, formerly a supporter of Donald Trump, interestingly enough, had a fundraiser for the former president at his home in Palm Beach, Florida. Tickets to that cost $500,000 per couple. He's a billionaire. Very wealthy individual. He's contributed over $200,000 to the RNC during the last election cycle, donated to David Perdue and Kelly Loeffler because he wanted the Republicans to maintain control of the Senate, gave to House Minority Whip Steve Scalise. He has $1.7 billion. And he said, we need Manchin to keep things in the middle. Center right to center left, I don't care, it's good for me. And I just want to thank Nelson Peltz because he's making the point better than I have been able to of what the hell the center is supposed to be. What the F moderate means. What moderate means is billionaires like it. It does not challenge billionaires. And that is what Joe Manchin and people like Kyrsten Sinema are there to do. It's not moderate, it's not center, it's not between two things. It's not a compromise between left and right. It is its own hardcore radical position. But the radical position is not to remake America in a leftist image or remake America in a conservative image. It is to make sure that nothing changes, nothing fundamental, nothing structural. They have become rich, powerful, wealthy, in control with the system that we have. And they have radicals who want to maintain that system. And so when you hear moderate, when you hear the center, center left, center white, whatever, just think of Nelson Peltz. Think of his interests, because he doesn't want anything to change. Dude's made a couple billion and he's looking towards 10. He'd love to hit 50. He wants to get richer, but he's going to need people like Joe Manchin to make sure that it happens. Gary, what do you think?
You know, I think that there's this desire, you know, even when you look at a Trump becoming president, that people look at rich people and say, oh, they know something, right? And what rich people know is how to keep themselves rich. They don't necessarily know how to solve problems for working class people. As a matter of fact, they do a really good job of giving a stiff arm to working class people and making sure that we're not advancing beyond where they want us to be, because that cuts into their profits and their ability to get a higher ranking on the Forbes list, right? At Peltz level in the world, it's about how much more can I acquire to leave to my great grandkids, and we got folks worrying about how can they feed their grandkids right there, right?
Yeah.
We've got people worrying about how can they put food on the table for the children in their families right now. And I don't care if you're a Democrat or a Republican, staying in the middle don't do nothing for nobody, right? Mm-hmm. And that is the thing that we need to recognize, that if we do what we've always done, we're gonna get what we've always got, and this country can never be all that it can be. We've gotta be able to look at people like that and say, you know what, just because you made a lot of money doesn't mean that you know a damn thing about politics and public policy. It doesn't mean, because what we realize with billionaires is all they're concerned about is the business of government, right? Mm-hmm. Not the services of government. And government is supposed to serve the people. And the things that serve the people are important. And the way we fund them is by making people like him pay more of their money, which is a fair share, right? Yeah. Because don't tell me just because he gives millions of dollars in taxes, but you've got billions sitting there, and the percentage, I may pay 28, 29% in taxes, and a guy like him pays 10, 12% in taxes. That's not fair.
Yeah, just because he pays more money, that much.
Who feels it more? And so we're not having these conversations in a very practical way. We're allowing people to be mesmerized by the money that other people have. I want you to have money. And the only way you're going to have money is if we build a more balanced system.
100%. Yeah, I'm trying to remember who did that study of people like Bezos and Elon Musk, the actual effective tax rate that they pay. This dude has $1.7 billion. I don't know what his salary is. It's probably like $20, $30, $40 million. But what I know is it ain't nothing compared to the wealth he has. So even if we raise the tax rate 2 or 5 or 10%, he'll pay a little bit more. He might, let's say he pays $1 million. He has $1.7 billion. He doesn't care about that. It doesn't have any effect on him whatsoever. You could have a wealth tax. You could actually tax accrued wealth that's just sitting there, often being held outside of the United States. And again, it wouldn't actually have an effect on him. That dude, if you took 2% of his wealth every year, you know what would happen to it? It would continue to grow. It wouldn't even shrink it. If it did, it wouldn't have any effect on him. But they're addicted. It's dragon sickness. That's all it is. He is sitting on a mountain of gold and he wants more of it. And he doesn't want you to have it. And he is fine if you suffer as a result of that lack. And if it means that we're not gonna invest in infrastructure, we're not gonna build more highways, there's not gonna be elder care, we're not gonna have any of that. He doesn't care. He's fine. He ain't suffering for anything at $1.7 billion. And by the way, we don't have time for the video, but he says he talks to Manchin every week, and I am not surprised by that at all. Just like the Exxon CEO and all of that, they have direct access to these senators. We have to follow them into bathrooms to have a chance of talking with them. They get phone calls every week because they dish out checks for $500,000 at a time. Any final thoughts, Gary?
Who paid for your politician?
Yep. Yeah. We're gonna take our second break. And when we come back, we're gonna mix it up, have a little bit of fun. Donald Trump has a social media platform. We're gonna break it down after this. Fascist Killer says, I wanna see Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin's ads against Joe Biden's initiatives during the election. Yeah, me too. But the problem is they don't have to actually try to persuade the people. They're not running on the things they're doing. They ran on the opposite of them. Ridiculous how this functions. But anyway, we're gonna mix it up and we're gonna maybe have a little bit of fun. We'll see. We'll jump into this. Donald Trump is at long last launching his own social media site. It's a big win, my producers say. I love this. For moms who deleted their Facebooks in solidarity with the former president being booted from Facebook. That is a funny joke. But I've been following the anti-vax stuff. Those moms are still very much on Facebook. But anyway, what is it? It is Truth Social. It's gonna launch in 2022, technically. You can see there, follow the truth. They're very into this. And Donald Trump announced it saying, I am excited to send out my first truth on Truth Social very soon. TMTG was founded with a mission to give a voice to all. So what does he mean there? What does he mean a truth on truth? Well, so like, you know how on Twitter you tweet? On truth, you truth. That's what you're doing. And if you like someone else's truth, you can re-truth it. This is like someone pitched this for SNL and they were like, that's a little on the nose. But no, that's actually what they're going with, Gary. You can truth, you can re-truth, you have a truth feed that you can follow, and you can just see a whole bunch of truths on there. We still have a little bit of time, but do you think you'll be signing up for Truth Social?
Sounds like a garden of lies to me. I'm good.
It kind of does. We actually have some proof of that. But first, the behind the scenes. How did this get going? Well, this company was formed by a quote special purpose acquisition company, like regular people own. His partner in this is Digital World Acquisition. which sounds like the bad guy in a sci-fi movie, but that's who he's working with. So these are called blank check companies. They're an increasingly popular type of investment vehicle that sells shares to the public with the intention of using the proceeds to buy private businesses. And so that was incorporated in Miami a month after Mr. Trump lost the 2020 election. He was still challenging the results, still telling people he'd be president, but they were gearing up for this at the time. We talked about that at the time. By the way, in their slide for this, this is one of the images they show for them galvanizing a conservative media universe. And I don't know about you, that looks like sperm moving towards an egg. That's the only image I get. Am I crazy or is that not sperm moving towards an egg? And one of the sperm is Fox News, one is OAN, one is Newsmax, one is Rumble, which I'll remind you is for right wingers. But anyway, they're all trying to inseminate TMTG. Am I crazy? I don't know. That's what I see.
That was pretty good, Jack.
Thank you. I think that that's there. But anyway, so according to the what we have here, he's gotten like $300 million for this. That is $300 million wasted because this thing ain't going to last. By the way, some of the investors who funded it didn't know that Trump was involved and are kind of frustrated now. They didn't know that this is going to be a Trump thing. They just thought it was going to be a social media company. So that's fun. But it gets more fun with Truth Social because this is, after all, Truth Social with your truth feed and you send out truths. And it's also, by the way, it's a right wing thing. So there's no cancel culture. There's free speech at last. Twitter and all those, they censor you. These are like, you're not going to be censored. Except that there is a long list of rules of prohibited activities for Truth Social. And the most fun one is number 23. You are not allowed to disparage, tarnish, or otherwise harm, in our opinion, us and or the site. You literally cannot criticize Truth Social on Truth Social. That's free speech for you, Gary.
Sounds a whole lot like Trump. Sounds exactly like a very sensitive, tiny man who can't deal with people saying anything about him. You know, we already know that the reason he even ran for president is because he got roasted at the Obama. He couldn't handle it. President Obama roasted him, and then he ran for the presidency. So if somebody talks about his little social media platform, he can't take it. You know, yep. He just can't take it. Small man.
Yeah, I guess you can speak certain truths, but not others. You have to keep them to yourself. And it becomes even funnier when you see what he says about this site. He says, "We live in a world where the Taliban has a huge presence on Twitter, yet your favorite American president has been silenced." He added that the company behind all this was founded with a mission to give a voice to all, unless you mock me, in which case your ass is grass. Amazing how it works. Not cancel culture. Let's be very clear about it. You literally can censor people from just pointing out, like, hey, like, there's some bugs on the site. Banned. You're out of here. You can't disparage or tarnish, in our opinion, the site. But that is not actually the funniest thing about this site. The funniest thing, though, is that within just hours of the news breaking, Truth Social was broken. But wait, it's launching in 2022. How is it already broken? Well, they were planning to do a beta version in November, which, again, it's not November yet. But apparently, someone named Aubrey Cottle of anonymous fame tweeted out a link that she discovered to it that let you sign up early and use the site, which is not supposed to be available until next year. And so a lot of people did. And so what did they do? Well, a Daily Dot staffer claimed the handle at Donald Trump. Others grabbed his son. Real Donald J. Trump, Mike Pence, like, they took all of those accounts. Whoever was running at Donald J. Trump posted a meme of a pig defecating on its testicles, which is allowed. You are allowed to do that. But if you point out that their security is trash, you'll be banned according to rule number 23. So I don't think this is going to end up being worth $300 million, Gary. I just don't.
Neither is Trump.
That's also true. Okay, well, let's turn from that to much more important news. Let's launch into something very different. Hold for 1 second. Sorry, quick transition there. Apologies, it's my fault. You've probably been told for some time during this pandemic that American workers are too lazy. They got used to getting those stimulus checks and now they don't want to work. They just don't want to go to work. That's why the enhanced unemployment had to be cut, because you all are too lazy and they can't get people to fill all of these jobs. Well, a worker in Florida decided to test that theory. Joey Holtz recalled first hearing complaints about a labor shortage last year when he called to donate convalescent plasma at a clinic near Fort Myers, Florida. So overall, good guy, Joey Holtz, trying to donate plasma. Says this guy went on this rant about how he can't find help and he can't keep anybody in his medical facility because they all quit over the stimulus checks. And I'm like, your medical professionals quit over $1,200 checks? That's weird. But anyway, he decided to actually test it. Lives his life by the scientific method and decided to actually test it. So over the next several months, you had all of these businesses saying you have to cut off the enhanced unemployment, no more stimulus checks. We need to get the workers back to work. We desperately need help. We're having to close down Wendy's, people. Well, he said he found it hard to believe the government money was keeping people out of the labor force. And he said, if this extra money that everyone's supposedly living off of stopped in June and it's now September, obviously that's not what's stopping them. So he decided to run an experiment. On September 1st, he sent job applications to a pair of restaurants that had been particularly public about their staffing problems. He's targeting businesses that are saying they can't get workers. Then he widened the test. And for 60 days, he applied to two different businesses every single day. And the vast majority of them, and he was tracking a spreadsheet, had been vocal about needing workers. So he had just 9 email responses after 28 applications, 1 follow-up call, and 1 interview with a company that advertised a full-time job paying $10 per hour. But when he called them, they were in fact only gonna give $8.65. They'd lied about the wage and it wasn't actually full time. You'd have to work up to that. You wouldn't actually get benefits initially. You don't get the money, you don't get the benefits. They were lying to you. And this is effectively what we have seen. It's not that they can't find workers, it's that they can't find workers who are willing to be exploited in the way that they were before the pandemic. They're willing to work, and they're even willing to work for the things you say you'll give them in the ads. But when you're lying and you won't give them benefits, you won't give them the wage that they need to actually live, they have a problem with that. And that is the true problem at the heart of our economy right now. It's that workers have had a taste of not being relentlessly ground down under CEOs' boots, and they don't want to go under the boots again. And that is not an issue of the workers, that's an issue of the CEOs as I see it. Gary, what do you think?
I agree 100%. I think that if we really want to be wise about getting people back into the workforce, one, raise the minimum wage, make sure that you're paying people a livable wage. People after this pandemic have recognized their value, and as they've recognized their value, they're not going to go and take a job to build you up, make you more money while their value is not appreciated by your organization. If your organization is a stand-up organization, then pay people a livable wage. The other thing about this is, you know, there is a logic from 30 years ago that you go to college, you get a job, you work the same job for 20, 30 years and you retire. Well, most young people today, they stay on a job 3 to 4 years, they're moving on to something else. People are becoming more entrepreneurial. People figure out how can they make investments that help them make money long-term. And so people are not saying, you know what, I'm gonna take an $8.25 an hour job. Well, I could go sit in my house and figure out how to make $100 faster than I can slaving at your job. And so people are going out and trying to figure out how can they go make money in a legal formative way to create entrepreneur energy. And I hope that some of those people are successful in building organizations and companies that pay people a livable wage and bring people back into the workforce. But this mythological thing that people for $1,200 a month aren't going back to work, $1,200 a month ain't enough to live nowhere in America.
Yep.
You know, and so like telling people that a stimulus check or some type of stimulation to the economy, which by the way, helped Amazon make a ton more money, right? These checks that have come out have helped corporations have some of the best quarters that they've had. They've expanded their companies and grown their businesses. So let's not pretend that this money that was given away was the problem. The problem is your piss poor company.
100%. And thankfully, we have some people. AOC was going off about this online. That's good. We have some people who understand this. There might be a crisis, but it's more fundamental than just laziness. We'll see if they actually ever engage with the true crisis. Kind of doubt it. Anyway, that is the end of our first hour. If you're on Twitch or YouTube, we do have more coming for you. We'll be back in just a few. Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.